Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the October NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
Sure. Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could you call the roll?
Yes. Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Harlow.
Here.
Phil Elagio.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Maciel Ferrara, Robert Simcoe,
here.
Jane Bauer,
here.
Marcia Morley, Aisha Glover,
present.
Jewel Antoine Johnson,
here.
Cameron Cruz from the Governor's Office,
here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo,
here.
Manuel Polino for Acting Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean Lasserette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. And a very nice turnout today from the board. Thank you. The first item is to approve one set of meeting minutes from the September 11th, 2024 regular meeting. Before you, board, are the meetings, the minutes from that meeting. I kindly request that board members state their name for the record when making a motion or second. Could I hear a motion to approve the September meeting minutes, please?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. Second. Thank you. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none.
I was out, so I'll recuse myself.
Yes, thank you, Jenny. The meeting minutes are approved. All right, let me deliver some brief opening remarks. Good morning, and welcome to the NJEDA's October board meeting. Over the past few years, the NJEDA has committed itself to advancing programs and initiatives that will support Governor Murphy's goal of transitioning to 100% clean energy by 2035, the most ambitious clean energy goal in the nation. The NJEDA's clean energy program supported an equitable transition to a green economy, creating high-quality career opportunities and a stronger, healthier, and cleaner environment for New Jersey residents for decades to come. Today, the board will be asked to consider the approval of the Garden State CPACE program, another bold initiative that will add to our robust toolkit of clean energy programs. CPACE is a new form of financing that will allow commercial property owners to access funding to undertake energy efficiency, renewable energy, water conservation, and resiliency improvements on their buildings, bringing together property owners, contractors, municipalities, and qualified capital providers to minimize upfront investment costs and lower barriers for necessary energy upgrades. CPACE programs have been enacted in over 2 dozen states across the country and have proven to be a useful tool in attracting private capital into renewable energy markets. The board will also be asked to consider expanding eligibility requirements under the NJ Cool program, which provides grants for eligible hard construction costs for emissions-reducing projects, such as updating a building's heating and cooling system. Originally created to only include commercial buildings, the board this morning will be asked to expand the type of buildings eligible to include industrial and institutional buildings, such as schools, nonprofits, and local government buildings. The steps taken today build upon the NJEDA's history of creating initiatives that encourage increased investment to further the state's clean energy objectives. The New Jersey Green Bank, approved by the board in April, will make equity investments, provide credit enhancements, and offer loans and other financial vehicles to attract private capital to enable the state to reach its climate goals. Yesterday, applications closed for the Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge, which will provide grants to develop and implement workforce training programs that will prepare New Jersey residents for green economy careers, with a particular focus on cultivating a diverse workforce and serving overburdened communities. And to ensure New Jersey remains a hub for offshore wind production and manufacturing, we'll soon have the first purpose-built onshore support facility for offshore wind development on the East Coast. The New Jersey Wind Port will support up to 1,500 manufacturing, assembly, and operations jobs when complete, and serve as a staging ground for projects up and down the Atlantic seaboard. These programs and initiatives illustrate the economic opportunities that a transition to a green economy can bring to New Jersey, offering residents high-paying career paths, cleaner and more resilient communities, and greater investments in municipalities throughout the state. Now let me turn it over to Tim for his CEO report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I appreciate everyone being here and being on the phone. A few things to get through, and I'll try and be relatively brief as usual. There's a fair bit to get through, and I'm going to hand the mic to Sean in a moment, who's going to do a bit of a double-click on some of the things Terry was just describing around clean energy, because we have a lot on the agenda that's clean energy-related, so doing a bit of a table-setter on all of our clean energy efforts. Thanks for hearing me.
You're talking very fast. I'm very proud of you.
We slow down. We'll be here. We'll order in lunch for you, Rob. Slow it down.
I'm proud of you.
I haven't even had most of my coffee. But Sean will take the mic in a moment and talk about small business, clean energy. Just a couple of things to highlight. We are a handful of days left in Hispanic Heritage Month. Our team's had a really good set of engagements throughout that month, which starts mid-August and goes through, September goes through mid-October, including a really nice visit with some of our federal partners and our small business services team did in Camden a couple of weeks ago to tour Hispanic-owned businesses in Camden, many of which have participated in our Main Street program, which is which continue to be incredibly impactful. And so the important marker of the governor's commitment and our commitment to equity and inclusion in all of our programs, but small business programs being at the center of that effort. It's also been a busy month for events and such. September and October are always lots of events. I was able to join the governor and Kathleen and a few other folks in Rum, at the kickoff of NJ FAST. That one's moving really quickly as one of our strategic innovation centers. FAST stands for Financial Technology Accelerator at Stevens Institute of Technology. It's in Hoboken and partners with Plug and Play and Prudential. We announced that project back in the spring. We had a nice event in May or June at Stevens, and then the first cohort of startups going through that were selected and pitching in Hoboken in September. So that's got a real nice immediate sort of cadence and impact to it. Similarly exciting, although a much longer gestational period on this project, the NJ PAC major development project kicked off with a nice groundbreaking that the governor, the mayor, majority leader, budget chair, also representing county executive, were in attendance at last month in Newark, which got some nice national press attention in the New York Times, I would note. Really great indicator of what our programs can do. I think that project does not happen without Aspire. And the award of nearly $200 million in tax credits that this board has approved earlier in the year, that project simply would not happen without that, and the transformative project for not just Newark, but Essex County, North Jersey, and overall. So really exciting project there as well. I was at Manufacturing Day last Friday in Freehold. We're talking about particularly the manufacturing voucher program, which the board just approved phase three of in our last meeting. We've awarded more than 300 manufacturing voucher program grants, or I suppose called grants, vouchers. Gabriel's going to fuss at me. They're vouchers. And met a bunch of the awardees and folks who have gotten those, and the stories they tell of the impact of that project, that program has had on their business, continues to be extraordinary. We've also had a few launches of programs and projects since we were last together. We launched phase two of the child care program, which is for home-based child care providers. It comes on the heels of, or a companion to, the child care facilities improvement program, which we've talked about a lot, and a few of us had a chance to visit one of the grantees a couple weeks ago during our board retreat in New Brunswick, is it North Brunswick somewhere? A Brunswick for sure. Importantly, not only is that having a transformative impact on the child care sector, I think, and Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, something like 300-plus registered contractors supported by that program as well. So not only doing right and doing well for the child care sector, but supporting good jobs in the construction trades to build those facilities and make those improvements as well. A deep appreciation to Rob and his team for their partnership and making that real, because good intentions are one thing, but actually making that real and making the gears work together, deeply appreciated. We also launched the second phase of the ART program, which is now taking applications as well as the We have launched the acquisition program, right?
Yeah.
Yep, the small business acquisition program, which is a pilot program for small businesses that are interested in buying the property that they may lease or rent. So again, continue to push forward on all different fronts: innovation, entrepreneurship, small business, equity, inclusion, big construction projects, community development, you name it. We continue to push ahead and be busy on it. That's reflected in our board dashboard as well. I'll go through this in great detail, but you can see, you know, we're just a click below $1.5 billion invested in the state's economy through the year. That's a lot of money, at least where I come from, and continuing to push forward on any number of programs that are having a huge impact. Happy to take questions on all that, but again, I'd highlight continuing to make approvals on child care, the small business programs, the improvement grant and lease program being pretty active, as well as the angel tax credit program making a lot of awards in the month of September. With that, I will pause and take any questions I think I have to say so far before I hand to Sean. Any questions, comments, concerns, observations, reactions?
I might have something. So, last month, the EDA hosted a film writing seminar in my town of Hamilton. And first one I attended, I was very impressed. I thought it was professional, well done. I believe there was 18 different towns that attended there that day. You attended, which meant a lot to all of us there, and I was proud to be a board member that day to see. We do a lot for businesses, but now we're doing something for towns that in turn will help businesses. I think it's an innovative touch, and I wanted to thank you and congratulate you and the other members of the staff for a job well done there.
Thank you, I really appreciate that. Thank you. It was a great event. I believe it was your idea to have it, so thank you for if memory serves, and I love you for this. You heard about some other town having one and said, well, where's Hamilton? And we got it organized, so thank you for doing that.
It worked.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Thank you, Fred.
Mr. Chairman, I want to acknowledge that Marcia Marley joined just before Tim began his CEO report.
Okay, so I think we have 100% attendance.
Correct.
Great, thanks. Great. Sean, floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you again for the opportunity to give a little more color to some of our active clean energy programs. As the chairman mentioned, you know, we are working hard to help the state meet its clean energy goals, and with that, really have an opportunity to do a lot of local job creation with really strong career development, particularly in our overburdened communities. Next slide, please. So one will highlight one of our longest-standing programs, and today I'm just going to focus on a few. There's more that other groups at EDA work on, especially regarding offshore wind. But one in particular is NJZIP, which is one of our most popular programs. We've had two phases to date. Phase three is actively in development, and we should be bringing that to the board in the next couple of months. We have a voucher program for medium and heavy-duty zero-emission vehicles. This is everything from a cargo van all the way up to a large tractor-trailer, where we are basically reducing the purchase price to businesses in the state, bringing these online. And this is battery electric vehicles and, in some cases, even hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicles, all zero emissions coming out of the tailpipe. Frequently oversubscribed when we've launched these within a matter of weeks, so definitely high demand from the market as we look to bring the cost of these vehicles down and closer to conventional diesel gasoline options that still are cheaper today and kind of encourage adoption of this. With that, we've supported over 90 businesses. Overwhelming majority have been small minority businesses, especially in the state's overburdened communities, and more than 300 and counting vehicles that we're getting put on the road, tackling the largest sector of the state's greenhouse gas emissions. And if you keep your eyes peeled, you may see one of the NJZ bumper stickers driving around on the back of you. Next, please. The other program that we'll talk about a bit more in detail today, in just a few moments, is the NJ Cool program. So launched it this past April, really focused on building emissions, the second largest source emissions in the state behind transportation. A pilot program that we just started in Newark, Edison, and Atlantic City, where we look to tackle on-site operating emissions from buildings. And that's primarily from heating systems by encouraging them to swap from fossil fuel-based systems to zero-emission systems, mainly electric systems, and also swapping out high-polluting refrigerants, which are used in the cooling system. We provide grants via reimbursement for hard construction costs, and those start at $50,000 all the way up to $1 million. Applications are currently open, and, you know, happy to report that we have a few applications that just came in the door, actively processing those, and, you know, look to get construction started within the next couple months. Next slide, please. Other program that you heard about earlier in the year, our clean energy loans program. This is a $80 million revolving loan fund that we're using federal dollars from the state small business credit initiative. We've deployed $10.5 million to date to two solar developers in the state, projected to generate over 185 jobs over the next 5 years with that money put to work. And this is a co-lending program where we match private dollars up to a one-to-one basis, but our interest rate is at least 3% below what the private lender is offering, with additional bonus reductions for minority women and veteran-owned businesses in the state. And this is one of our most flexible programs where we can support not just individual projects in the state, you know, say a certain building or a renewable generation facility. We can also provide working capital to clean energy businesses to expand and really increase their potential for what they can do in the state, both in economic development and job creation, but equally important, reducing emissions and helping the state meet its clean energy goals. Next slide. Last one, I won't really go into detail because, as Chairman mentioned, we're bringing this to you today for approval, but we're happy to bring today our CPACE program, which is a lending program for building efficiency and resiliency improvements, matching a model that's been used successfully in over 30 other states, and I'll let my colleague Max kind of go more into details on that when he brings this item to you. So, yeah, just a sample of a few of our active products. We have more in development and more to work, so I'm excited to be bringing a few more items to you over the next few months as we put funding to work and really help the state meet its clean energy goals. Thank you.
All right. Chair, before you floor back, one more item, which is bittersweet because I'm excited for her, but it's a huge loss for us. A couple weeks ago, Christine Baker let me know that she's going to be moving on after 5 years, 5 years plus of extraordinary service at the EDA. She's accepted a position as a partner at O'Toole Scrivo. No relation to this O'Toole, but definitely relation to the former chair, Todd Scrivo. And so a huge loss for us. I'm really excited for Chris, and I can't say enough good things about her leadership and service to this organization over the last 5+ years. We are a bigger, better, stronger, fairer, more equitable organization. Thanks to Chris's leadership and extraordinary work around here. We're going to miss her. So please join me in thanking her for her service to the EDA and wishing her all the best in her. That, I will yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim, and again, thank you, Chris. Now we turn to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Daniel Esser to share the NJEDA public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy available on the website, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by phone. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may register to speak only once during the public comment period to ensure there is enough time available for all those who wish to speak, and related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. Thank you. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. And now I'd like to acknowledge any members of the public in the room who would like to speak. Okay, seeing none, could you open the line for anyone who wishes to speak on the phone?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. We do have someone. It'll be just one moment. We have a question from the line of Jonathan Cloud. Please go ahead.
Yes. I just want to commend the board and the EDA for finally getting to approve the commercial CPACE program, the Garden State CPACE program. As the executive director of New Jersey PACE for the past 10 years, we've been advocating strongly for this from a grassroots point of view. And we hope to be able to use the program, and we hope it will that the EDA will find ways to facilitate the application of the CPACE program to smaller projects, which otherwise tend to get cut out of the market. This is a very important initiative in terms of achieving the states and the federal government's climate goals, and we look forward to being a part of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan. Operator, any other comments?
There are no other comments.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to now deliver the a couple of committee reports. As people know, we have committee meetings between board meetings, and we try to give summaries of those committee meetings at this board. So first, I want to report that the Audit Committee met on September 26th. Received the usual updates, including financial updates and reports and updates regarding internal and external audits. Also on September 26th, the Policy Committee met and considered a number of items, which will be presented for action today. So a quick summary, under economic transformation, staff presented a recommendation in support of the creation of the Garden State CPACE program, modifications to the NJ Cool program, an MOU with Rutgers University and Stockton University for offshore test bed development in support of offshore wind development and research, and proposed amendments to the NJ Green Bank bylaws. Under economic security, staff presented minor modifications to two state-funded food security initiatives. Under community development, staff presented a recommendation for a grant award under the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation, or ART program in Atlantic City. And under authority matters, staff presented proposed amendments to the authority prevailing wage rules, an MOU with the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, proposed new and updated delegations of authority pertaining to legal reviews and pilot programs, and a contract extension request for business and information technology consulting and advisory services. All of those will be reviewed this morning. So with that, let's get on with the agenda. Under economic transformation, the first item is the Garden State CPACE program, Max Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, today I am presenting a memo regarding the approval for the creation of the Garden State Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy Program, or the CPACE program. CPACE has existed for more than a decade around the country and is now active in over 30 states. Collectively, CPACE has been utilized to finance more than $7.2 billion, not including 2024, so that number is north of $8 billion now. Across more than 3,300 projects, which have produced nearly 90,000 jobs. The New Jersey program was authorized by statute in 2021 and offers an innovative form of financing for eligible commercial property owners looking to undertake clean energy and resiliency projects. The financing is repaid through a special assessment on the property, which is paid as part of the property tax bill. This means the municipality collects the payments and then must remit them back to the capital provider. Use of the program can result in lower interest rates on payments paid over a longer term. At this time, the program will utilize only private capital from qualified capital providers, which will be approved by the authority prior to the approval of a project application. The memo also requests that the board approve delegated authority for qualifying capital providers and technical reviewers, allowing municipalities to opt in, approval of project applications, approval of local CPACE programs, and amending the program requirements based on statutory changes. This will be an open platform program where any applicant will be approved based on the requirements set forth in the program guidelines. Complete applications will be reviewed to assess eligibility and must include the qualified capital provider, qualified technical reviewer, and then project-specific information.
As I previously mentioned, and as the chairman mentioned, the program is designed to help enable the undertaking of clean energy and resiliency projects, which include energy efficiency, renewable energy systems, EV charging infrastructure, energy storage, water conservation, hurricane resistance and flood resistant construction, stormwater management systems, and microgrids. Because at this time, the capital for CPACE projects is from only private capital providers, the authority only requires the CPACE financing abide by certain requirements, including that, one, the maximum amount of the CPACE financing cannot exceed 100% of project costs for a retrofit project, or 35% of the property's post-construction value for a new construction project. Two, the total combined debt on the property cannot exceed 90% of the value of the property after including the value add from the CPACE project. Three, the term length of the project cannot exceed the weighted average useful life of the improvements, or 30 years, whichever is less. And four, for retroactive financing projects, the project must not yet be complete or must have been completed no more than 3 years prior to submitting an application to EDA. I'd also like to add that per the statutory amendment signed by Governor Murphy on September 12th, all projects that receive CPACE financing are subject to the authority's prevailing wage requirements. In closing, this memo is again to request the approval for the creation of the Garden State CPACE program and for delegated authority to the CEO to approve participation of different parties, to approve project applications, and to amend the program requirements based on statutory amendments. Thank you all for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Before any questions, let me just offer a couple comments. One, thanks to Max. Setting up this program, notice it was passed originally in 2021. It's been a few years. We had some reasons for those delays. I'll get to one of those in a minute. But this is a very unique and different kind of program. It walks us about as close to being a regulator as I'm comfortable with us being. More akin to like our bond function than it is to tax credits or grants or some of the things we do more regularly around here. So this is a bit of a new animal, and it took some time to kind of get our heads around it. And Max, in particular, and shout out to Ram and John and Kathleen, of course, as well, and Chris and Gabriel and lots of other folks spent a lot of time wrapping our heads around how to get this right. Hopefully, we have. Second thing I want to note: it's incredibly exciting. I think it's a really nice part of the clean energy toolkit. It is something that other states have done. Some cities have done it as well. Other thing I want to mention is just from the impact that this board has. When we started walking this program around, I think it was the spring or winter of earlier this year, more than a few of you indicated that the carve-out that the legislature had included in the bill for prevailing wage did not sit well with you. I agree. So we worked closely with the legislature, and Senator Lagana and Assemblyman Verrilli passed a bill. I think it was unanimous. If not, it was pretty darn close. That got to the governor's desk, and he signed it to close that loophole and make sure all these projects are prevailing wage, 100% soup to nuts. So all of which is a deep appreciation of this board's engagement to make these programs better. Thank you. Now, yield to any questions.
So our role here is, in effect, a facilitator?
Correct. Strictly speaking, there's no, other than our staff time, which costs money, there's no direct financial exposure. There's reputational exposure, quite significantly, which again makes it a bit like our bonding program, where when we issue bonds or allow people to issue bonds, we're putting our name on it. We're not putting our capital against it. Charles, to your point that you raised in committee, our reputational risk and that relationship to timing and being in the middle of projects is a real one, and one we'll keep our eye on. I don't think we're going to get hundreds of applications here. I think we're going to get, if we do 5 or 10 of these a year, I think that's about what I expect. If it's more, we'll figure out how to deal with that, and that'll be a good thing. It means more people are doing energy efficiency investments. But I think it'll be manageable.
Any other questions in the room or on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion.
Thank you. Second? Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. Next, modifications to the NJ Pool Program. Sean.
Good morning, everyone.
As mentioned previously, I'm here to present a memo requesting the board approve modifications to the existing NJ Cool pilot program. As a reminder, the board approved the creation of the NJ Cool program and its initial funding with $15 million of Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, funds at its November 2023 meeting. Applications launched for the program on April 22, 2024. The NJ Cool program provides grants to retrofit projects in existing commercial buildings that result in a reduction of operating greenhouse gas emissions. This pilot program currently supports projects located in the municipalities of Newark, Edison, and Atlantic City. The memo for you today proposes three modifications to the program. First, it clarifies the definition of what a high global warming potential refrigerant that is eligible for replacement under the program and grant funding. Second, while the program does allow for hybrid heating systems, this memo update confirms and clarifies that grant funds cannot be used for the cost of installation of any new fossil fuel-based systems. The third and most significant modification, as mentioned previously, is an adjustment to how eligible buildings are defined via the program. Currently, the program is only open to eligible commercial buildings, and that is defined via building occupancy class. In an effort to both simplify the application process and expand the types of buildings that can apply for funding, this memo seeks to expand that definition by using property class in addition to occupancy class. And the selected eligible property class types would allow for industrial and institutional buildings, such as schools and local government buildings, to also apply for program funding in addition to the existing commercial buildings that are allowed under current guidelines. In addition to these three modifications, we are seeking an additional delegated authority under the program. When applications launched on April 22nd of this year, the program included a one-year funding set aside for the original pilot communities of Newark, Edison, and Atlantic City. We are seeking today from the board delegated authority for the option to further expand that geography to include all designated overburden communities and communities that are formally designated as adjacent communities, as recognized by the state's environmental justice law and put to practice by our partners at DEP. This option would only be available following the expiration of the one-year set-aside, functionally on April 22nd of 2025. And this decision would be made to execute this based on assessing the rate of application uptake, especially following the adoption of today's modifications with expanded eligibility. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions on the program or for these proposed modifications.
Is there a reason why we're looking at modifications?
Partly we've heard a lot from the market that there's significant interest in working on these types of properties. We launched in April. We've had a few applications come in, but we have funding to put to work, and we're hearing a demand, so no reason not to.
I was going to ask, just what's your experience to date with market, take up on the program?
Yeah, so we've had two formal applications come in the last few weeks, another few that are in the pipeline. We spent the summer kind of doing a bit of a roadshow, getting the word out, and working with partners in utilities and other state agencies, local businesses. And since we actually launched, we've heard from schools and nonprofits that they want this funding and they have projects in mind. So that's part of the reason we're bringing it today.
If I can, the mechanical trades that are part of building trades, and both Robs can help me here with this, the sheet metal, the pipe fittery, the electrician, the insulators, they're very involved in programs like this, energy efficiency. And it might be worth our while to reach out to them, to partner and say, you have clients that that you service here. We have a program too that might assist them to do even more work and look at some of their expanded services to see if that would apply.
Yeah,
that's great.
Thank you, Fred. Yeah, we've done a outreach to the full Public Works Register contractor list, kind of getting interested contractors on our website to advertise potential applicants if they don't know who they work with. These organizations have expressed interest and definitely can redouble those efforts.
I just got a text. I forgot to mention the insulator, so trying to take away my pension. So
we'll go to those guys first.
Thank you.
Any other questions in the room or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the modifications?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the Modifications are approved. Thank you. Next, an MOU with Rutgers and Stockton for offshore testbed development.
Good morning. Today I'm here to present the MOU for the offshore testbed development between the EDA, Rutgers University, and Stockton University. And before I go into my prepared, my prepared statement, I just want to voice over this first slide that you see here to give you a sense of the activities that we're going to be activating and their location as well. On the map in the upper left-hand side, what you can see is LEO 15, which was the offshore testbed that we're activating, and its proximity to New Jersey. This site is located in state waters, so approximately 2.5 miles off the coast. The inlet to the left is Little Egg Harbor Inlet. It's framed to the north by Holgate, so southern LBI, and to the south in Brigantine. And as you navigate further to the west or inland, you can see the field stations that we're going to be incorporating into this project, and that's Rutgers Marine Field Station and Stockton's Marine Field Station. The estuary that they work within are within the Great Bay, and it's also a part of the Jacques Cousteau Natural Estuarine Research Reserve. So if you look at all the assets we have here, you can tell that there's a lot of activity. This is pretty much the hub for marine science, oceanographic research, and coastal research here in New Jersey.
Is there actually a structure on the ocean floor today?
There is a base that you can connect into. It's pretty dilapidated, and it's been impacted by storms and coastal features. But the idea here is we'll reactivate that and then put more structures out there to support research. But the LEO 15 site is currently leased and operated by Rutgers University. What we were doing is reactivating that site and supporting research. So today I'm here to request approval for an MOU between the EDA, Rutgers University, and Stockton University to develop an offshore testbed for research and technological innovation. The testbed will enable testing and development of new technologies for the offshore wind and related marine energy industry. Under the MOU, EDA will provide funding to Rutgers and to Stockton for key initiatives, including upgrading their research vessels, purchasing of an oceanographic buoy, sensor, and mooring system, and connecting a data connection communication system to that. We'll be covering the associated maintenance costs with respect to the testbed, and hiring a testbed manager and instrument technician to oversee operations. We're also requesting delegated authority to modify or extend the MOU as needed. That is to expand or reduce the responsibilities of Rutgers and Stockton with respect to operating the testbed. The MOU will provide $2.52 million to Rutgers and $142,000 to Stockton for a total of $2.66 million from the October 27, 2022 MOU between the EDA and the BPU for the Wind Institute. In June 2023, EDA released a request for expressions of interest, or RFEI, to develop a Wind Innovation Center. And the RFEI revealed a critical need for an ocean-based test site to facilitate the development of new and innovative technologies. This MOU will address that need and directly aligns with the Wind Institute's goals to advance offshore wind research and innovation, which will unlock market potential. The test bed will be a unique asset for innovation and technology development in New Jersey and the East Coast, and directly support researchers and startups testing, validating, and commercializing new technologies that advance the offshore wind industry. Research activities at testbed will directly contribute to the Wind Innovation Center's mission, now referred to as WIRE, if it is developed. The testbed will position New Jersey as a national leader in offshore wind research and development. Rutgers will manage the testbed's operations, with Stockton providing a supporting role. They will integrate the testbed into their ongoing education and research activities as well. Additionally, both universities will offer researchers and startups affiliated with WIRE, once it's developed or if it's developed, access to onshore facilities including wet labs, dry labs, meeting spaces, dormitories, tank systems, and tooling resources. This access will be provided at no cost to the researchers and startups through an in-kind match contribution from the universities. In summary, we are requesting approval of the MOU between the EDA, Rutgers University, and Stockton University to develop an offshore testbed that will advance offshore wind research and technology development, utilizing funding from the EDA-BPU MOU for the Wind Institute. This concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to ask any questions that you may have.
Any questions?
So we have a submarine, the vessel, right?
I was thinking it could be a future board meeting.
What's the, is the vessel?
There are four vessels that will be upgraded.
Correct. There'll be three vessels through Stockton, through Rutgers infrastructure, and one through Stockton.
Which they already have. These are just upgrades.
Correct. Just basically retrofitting what they have so they can support the researchers to bring equipment back and forth, as well as transport researchers and startup companies.
So EDH will be strictly funding, passing through the BPU funds?
Correct. We'll be funding them to provide these upgrades, as well as hire full-time staff to support the operations that are associated with the research that's going on at the testbed.
Do you have any obligation to report back how how the funds are being used or the effectiveness? Do we have to collect any data from Stockton and Rutgers and report back to where the funding source is going?
We're requesting performance indicators from them to understand who's using the resources, how they're using them, and things associated with the operations. But as far as the funding goes, once we're allocated them to Rutgers, we're okay. We're covered.
Thank you. Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Angela.
Thank you. Any further comments? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the MOU is approved.
You had Jacques Cousteau on your bingo card for this meeting. Congratulations. You were a big winner. You're holding on. High odds. Thank you.
We've heard incredible feedback from the industry about this. I mean, this is like cutting edge to have this in New Jersey. And it's the fact that it's been a little bit dormant because of storm impact, bringing that online is of great interest to anybody that's in the innovation space for offshore wind.
Great. Okay, next, the New Jersey Green Bank, some amendments to the bylaws. John?
Good morning. Not nearly as exciting as the other presentations, but bear with me. The EDA board approved the incorporation and creation of the New Jersey Green Bank in April of this year. As part of that initial approval, the board approved the bylaws for the Green Bank. Because the Green Bank is a wholly owned subsidiary of EDA for the Subsidiary Act, EDA is required to maintain a certain level of control over the Green Bank's operations and governance. One way to do that is to make sure that the EDA board approves any amendments to the bylaws. Since the Green Bank commenced operations in May of this year, they have found that three amendments to the bylaws are needed. And they are increasing the number of directors from 5 to 7 to allow for committee work, similar to what's done within the EDA board. The majority of directors must continue to be EDA employees, and all directors shall serve for terms of 3 years. The second one is to change the title of the highest leadership position of the Green Bank from Chief Executive Officer to Executive Director to be a little bit more in line with other EDA affiliates and also to avoid confusion with the EDA CEO, who also happens to sit on the board. And the third one is to expressly state that the Green Bank bylaws must be approved by the EDA board before they can come into effect. Green Bank board has approved these amendments at the state meeting in September, and we're asking the board here to approve same. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, John. Just for everyone's sort of awareness, the first 3-6 months there has been a Green Bank life have been principally administrative. We are awaiting the check from the feds that will fully capitalize this. Those meetings have been principally administered, bylaws and doing job postings for executive director, that kind of thing. There's been a particular moment in the business activity.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me the second two are purely administrative, and the first is mainly to allow you more staffing for committees and other things.
Correct.
But we still maintain a majority.
Yes. Any questions, comments in the room, on the phone? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Move the launcher.
Thank you, Phil. Second?
Second, Charlotte.
Thank you. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the amendments are approved. Thank you. Next, under economic security, Rusha, on minor modifications to two state-funded food security initiatives.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here on behalf of the food security team requesting members to approve an extension to the application deadline for the Food Retail Innovation Delivery Grant Program, or as we call it very lovingly, the Fridge Program, for an additional 6 months, so from October 18, 2024 to April 18, 2025. Also requesting delegation to the CEO to approve a second 6 month extension from April 18, 2025 to October 18, 2025, if needed. Again, requesting delegation to the CEO to reallocate any unspent dollars from the Fridge program after the extensions are concluded to other NJEDA food security initiatives. And lastly, requesting an extension to the grant term for City of Salem's Food Security Planning Grant Program, which was awarded for a 9 month duration, so extension from August 10, 2024 to May 10, 2025. In December of 2022, the board approved the creation of our Fridge program. This Fridge program is a pilot program which provides grant funding of up to $250,000 to New Jersey food retailers to purchase self-contained temperature-controlled lockers, which you may see in the pictures, to be placed within an authority-designated food desert community. These lockers will be used for grocery deliveries to expand food delivery opportunities and improve food access for residents in our food desert communities. On November 15, 2023, we approved an application for the Fridge program and granted an award to Brookdale ShopRite in the amount of $250,000. This Fridge locker will be placed in Newark South, which is ranked number three on our food desert community ranking list, and also population of over 42,700 residents. This approval not only addresses food access challenges, but also makes grocery delivery via online ordering more convenient and accessible to Newark residents, many of whom utilize SNAP benefits to feed their families. The Newark Fridge locker would be placed by the Shani Baraka Women's Resource Center and is hoping that it opens soon. This will certainly be a key proof of concept milestone, which is anticipated to spur additional interest from other retailers across the state of New Jersey. We've also learned a lot of lessons during this duration, and so we want to spruce up our outreach and involve other retailers, community-based organizations, and so the extension would allow us to develop more interest and possibly have more Fridge lockers placed across the state. Lastly, my request is to extend the grant term for the City of Salem Food Security Planning Grant. In April 2022, the board approved the creation of the Food Security Planning Grant Program, a $1.5 million pilot program, which was basically focused on leveraging a distressed asset within a food desert community and proposing a plan as to how that asset can benefit as it relates to food access and food security. Grants range from $75,000 up to $125,000. And we successfully awarded 9 grants across our food desert community. In August of 2024, City of Salem requested an additional 9 month extension to the grant term due to certain challenges that they had encountered in recruiting or onboarding a consultant who could help them with a feasibility study. After multiple efforts and planned outreach, the city eventually received an interest from a bidder and have confirmed that consultant to be the one completing their feasibility study. However, an additional 9 month extension is required for that study to be successfully completed. This would allow the grantee and its vendor adequate time and a proposal that would eventually benefit the residents of City of Salem. All other food security grantees have, most of them have completed their program. There's two who are supposed to end, submit their final reports and final plan by the end of this month. This extension would only apply to City of Salem. There would be no changes to the existing grant agreement other than the fact that they would have 9 months, additional 9 months to finish the work. And that concludes my remarks. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have a question. Do you work with the local welfare office, SNAP offices in Essex County to notify our clients that we're doing this in the South Ward?
We work closely with the City of Newark's Sustainability Office, the Food Security and Sustainability mm-hmm. Office. So any resources that we have, we do share it with our partners across all food desert communities, not just one select. So they are aware of what programs we have. We also have listening sessions and program sessions where we talk about our program in depth, like, you know, how you can apply, what the application is. So we do our best to communicate all resources that we have to offer.
But in addition to the city, the county runs all the SNAP programs.
There is a task force for Essex County, and we do communicate with them. Yes.
I think once we get open in New York, that's a good time to remind
you.
Because then you go and feel it's been challenging because this has been sort of a month or two away for a number of months, and not because of anyone's hard work.
I'm assuming we can press one button and communicate to all the SNAP recipients in Essex County.
I think as soon as there's a thing they can go do, a thing that they can go do in 6 months, that I think would be great. So look forward to help you're figuring out that with you. Great.
Yeah, I was going to mean, it seems to me the extensions we were asking for here are, you know, not controversial, but just what, have we learned any lessons? I mean, why has it taken a year to get this up and running? What have we learned any lessons from this?
The administration had certain challenges. There was some misunderstanding around how to procure a consultant to finish this work. They did advertise it twice.
This is Salem. I think more about the bridge.
Salem's more
about the idiosyncrasies of small towns and other resource communities.
Right.
Challenging.
The location that the applicant has picked or the grantee has picked requires the city to issue certain permits. And so I think the challenge right now is acquiring those permits and getting certain modifications done to the space where this locker is going to go. And so that's the holdup right now. The grantee remains interested. You know, they've committed to pay $250,000 up front to get this locker. So I don't think there's any issue in, you know, feeling not so sure about the program. It's just getting certain permits in place.
So I think we have a kind of chicken and egg here, which is that what we're proposing, what we launched here, it's the first in the nation for any publicly supported refrigerated locker like this. This is still a burgeoning technology for anyone. And so what we know a lot about reach to retail. I know that Commissioner Angelo gave a nice pitch on our behalf at the New Jersey Food Council last week. Thank you. There is some reticence from the food retailers because this is a concept. And so until there's something where they can see how it would work, I think there's some skepticism about how much uptake there will be among shoppers. I have a feeling that they're going to be stunned by how much uptake there is because of the staggering number of SNAP recipients who can get groceries delivered to the locker. But until we can show that data and have one of our fellow retailers say, look, this is what it did, this is how it impacted, you know, revenue at my store, I think it's going to be a harder pitch. So that's why we wanted more time to have the proof, cut the ribbon, get the deliveries going, and then hopefully get some more uptake around the state.
Perspective on that, Tara and Richard, feel free to disagree. In addition to convincing your grocer to take the leap and do it, you also have to find a place to put it in a place that makes sense with a supporting organization that's going to sort of care and feed for it, you can't just, like, leave it in the middle of a city street and hope it goes well. You got to find, in context Newark, the Baraka Center, I think, has been a great partner. We got to find more. You got to get someone to be the grocery store, be the host, wrap around those services. This proof of concept, we'll be able to say, I actually think, to Tara's point, I think that we will also see a surge of demand. Once there's one of these things we can point to and say, it's there, what if it happens, I think a lot of mayors and elected officials will say, when do I get mine? Yep. Which would be great.
Great. Any other questions, comments in the room or on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the minor modifications?
Motion, Chris.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Alonzo.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the modifications are approved. Thank you. Community Development, Matt, on award of Atlantic City Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation Real Estate Grant.
Thank you. The memo contains two requests for action. A art award in the amount of $3.5 million to Silk Road AC LLC, and then the reallocation of surplus art real estate funds for Atlantic City to the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant. Just a little background, the art program was designed to assist commercial corridors in Newark and Atlantic City recover from long-term impacts of COVID-related commuter decreased traffic.
Newark and Atlantic City ARC applicants were awarded at the February 7th, 2024 NJEDA board meeting. After the board approval, three of the Atlantic City applicants were unable to proceed with their approved projects, which now requires reallocating those awards. Staff reallocated these funds to previously declined applicants based on scored ranking. As a result of these additional funds, staff was able to recommend Jamal Tate LLC for approval at the July 17, 2024 board meeting. The award amount was $1,182,241. The next highest scored applicant is Silk Road AC LLC. They are now able to receive the full award that they requested of $3.5 million due to the additional funds being available. After this award, there will be a balance of funding of $682,687 that will be collapsed into Atlantic City Revitalization Grant. There was one remaining applicant that scored high enough to be awarded. It was 171 Developers LLC. Staff reached out to this applicant to see if the project was still viable. The project, they weren't able to secure the site location, and currently the project's not viable. The Silk Road project that is being proposed is a revitalization project in the heart of Atlantic City's historic Ducktown neighborhood. The proposed project will consist of 2305, 2307, 2311, 2313, and 2322 Arctic Avenue. The grantee proposes to construct a five-story, 44-room boutique hotel that will consist of 66 beds. It will also include a courtyard that will be situated between the hotel and Arctic Avenue. The applicant currently has site control of a restaurant located at 2322 Arctic and a parking lot situated at 2311 Arctic Avenue. The site, an additional lot was added to the board memo 2322. That's where the restaurant's located. Just wanted to highlight that.
Commissioner Angela.
And I think the next slide has the... Yeah, the rendering. So the most of the ARC funds are going to go to the boutique hotel, which sits behind, is the structure behind. So that's the majority of where you see the parking lot, small park, then the restaurant.
For reference, that's the White House sub shop on the bottom right.
You ever been there, Rob? Okay. Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the grant as recommended?
So moved, Ferrara.
Thank you.
Dr. Angelo.
Thank you. Any further discussion, hearing none? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the grant is approved. Thank you, Matt. I should note for the record there was one NJ Asset Activation Planning grant that was on the agenda that has been withdrawn. Next, moving on to the Incentives Committee. Ginny, could you give us a quick summary of the committee meeting?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. The Incentives Committee met on September 25th. And two items are under consideration. The first is a film tax credit program application by Broadside Productions. And secondly, there will be a recommendation to not disqualify an applicant from receiving financial assistance from the authority. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. We'll now proceed with the items. First, under film tax credit program, Chris Delvecchio on a tax credit.
Thank you, Chairman. EDA staff has completed their review and recommends the approval of one film project submitted by Broadside Productions, Inc. for their qualified film production expenses on the film A Complete Unknown. As you can see here, the project is a biographical film about the life of Bob Dylan, starring Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan. We received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review submitted budgets to make sure they're reasonable for industry standards. The total qualified spend for this project is about $81 million. The project received a 2% diversity bonus of $1,618,012.12. And the total credits considered for this recommended approval is $28,698,201. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions, comments, or concerns.
Observe as an editorial matter, this is one of the biggest, highest-profile productions in Jersey in a very long time, and a lot of times. They did a little bit in New York City, but it was overwhelmingly in Jersey, so hopefully it's good, and if it's making the rounds for award season, we'll have something to be proud of. I don't know that anyone got to meet who was in my house referred to as Willy Wonka, pretty excited to have him running around and the cast running around 19 different municipalities.
Yeah.
So spending, it's cool, it's fun, you get to make the Willy Wonka.
Hello? One moment. No, just please hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, if you could just please continue to hold the line, we will attempt to reestablish with the main conference room. Please hold the line. Should we still hold? Yes, just please continue to hold the line. Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have rejoined the conference room. You may proceed.
For board members on the phone, we apologize. Evidently, there was a slight technical glitch. We are told we were disconnected as we discussed the film tax credit program. Not knowing that we were disconnected, we approved it. Is there anyone on the phone who has questions or comments?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we're moving on. We're now on item number 11, which is authority matters, and Maurice has just begun to present.
Thank you, Chairman. For those on the phone, I'll just briefly indicate again that we are requesting approval of the amendments to the existing NJEDA prevailing wage rules to be a floor consistent with authority's enabling statute, and also to bring the rules up to date to be consistent with the Economic Recovery Act, Prevailing Wage Contractor Registration Act, and the New Jersey Prevailing Wage Act. The requested amendments do not make any portion of the current rules any less stringent. The proposed rules will now include building services, which generally is defined as any cleaning or routine maintenance work done in connection with the care or securing of an existing building. The proposed rules identify factors that the authority may consider when determining if an activity is generally construction work. These will include physical changes to the property, equipment installation activity, property maintenance or repair, environmental work, including removal of hazardous substances, and whether the activity is undertaken to qualify the applicant, property, or project for authority financial assistance. In general, we will also consider any other factors the authority may deem necessary, which would be within specific programs. Proposed rules establish a mechanism for enforcement and upholding the prevailing wage requirements and authority-funded projects. In addition to any sanctions imposed by the New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the authority may undertake the following action in the event of a violation: withdrawing, suspending, terminating, recapturing, or requiring repayment of any authority financial assistance provided, forfeiting all or some of the awarded tax credits, implementing any other legal remedies available to the authority under its agreement with the recipient of the financial assistance. Additionally, the rules were posted to the authority's website for EO 63 informal comment, and the authority staff conducted a listening session. A media advisory was also released. The authority reviewed and considered four comments from three commenters. In closing, the members are requested to approve the attached proposed amendments to the existing prevailing wage rules, NJAC 19:30-4.1, and a new rule, NJAC 19:4.1A, and authorize staff to submit for publication in the New Jersey Register and submit as final adopted rules for publication in the New Jersey Register if no substantive comments are received, subject to final review and approval by the Office of the Attorney General and the Office of Administrative Law. I'll take any questions you may have.
Just real quick before we open the floor. Obviously, the overriding ambition here was to tighten up, close, avoid loopholes, also incorporate things that have happened. So, for example, the Economic Recovery Act overlaid building service work prevailing wage into all of our programs. That wasn't reflected in the prevailing wage rules. It was reflected in the Aspire rules, the Emerge rules, but not in the prevailing wage rules. So this is an attempt to kind of cross-hatch all those things to make sure there's no escape hatches anywhere. And generally speaking, I think, one way to shout out to Rob and his team who partnered closely with us on this process. These will now go out for full sort of proper public comment as opposed to the informal public comment we got before. So if we missed something, there's another opportunity to get it further right, but again, the overriding ambition was to tighten up and make sure we were doing the right thing by our workforce. So with that, and thanks to Maurice, thanks to Chris, Allison, Gabriel, and lots of other folks who worked really hard on getting these right. June Mass is somewhere in the back. There she is. Worked hard to get these right. Hopefully we did.
Any comments, questions in the room?
One question.
I'm sorry.
All right, so this is a cleanup, right? Catch up, cleanup.
Yep.
Or is this what we're approving consistent with the prevailing wage requirements in those statutes, or is it would an applicant have to look at two statutes now to comply,
question.
Or?
That's your question. Yeah, it's 100% consistent. They might have to look in a few places.
It is consistent. They apply slightly differently. So, for example, the New Jersey Prevailing Wage Act applies to public works. So when EDA is building its own, that's the one that applies. The ERA, for example, life expires tax credits. These rules try to put the everything that's in common together in one spot, and more importantly, the process by which EDA monitors and receives information is all in one place. So the one thing they would have to look at is the what creates a prevailing wage obligation may be in different places, but hopefully this puts EDA's process together.
Okay. Instead of going back, you know, past decade to catch up, is there any reason why moving forward, if changes are made, whether it's in the prevailing wage law or we have new programs, that we just can't catch up as we are moving forward rather than having to wait? Because you're putting an applicant, I'm assuming, at risk at times if our prevailing wage law requirements at the EDA do not match the state's prevailing wage law, if I'm correct, because that's what we're trying to accomplish right now.
Yeah, we'll look at others helping out here. So, we want to do this more often than every year. So we were generally behind Chris's enduring legacies. As we wish her well in the future, is getting us caught up on almost all of that. I think we're almost done getting caught up on most of our refreshments of all of our old things, and certainly the ambition is to keep up much more currently. Generally, I think the risk to the applicant is pretty de minimis because whether we adopt rules or not, what the legislature writes in black and white applies one way or the other. Our interpretations, definitions,
and EDL has forms, has notices. Those are easier to update that than say, by the way, these are the various sources of requirements. That has been kept up to date because it's much easier to do so. But agree that this was overdue.
I would just say that kudos to the team and a lot of collaboration back and forth, a lot of questions from DOL, just to make sure we're all on the same page and everything. And to address your question, Bob, I mean, there's no question everything that comes out of this entities, you know, wall-to-wall prevailing wage and contract to reg, you know, various few exceptions. And the idea that we would, with the right regs for every single statute that was passed, we would be doing nothing else but doing that all the time, especially the EDA and DOL, where we have laws passed almost every other week for us. But it's important to say that the statute is what controls no matter what.
And generally, each new program that comes out, if there's a new requirement, prevailing wage that legislation requires, that can be placed, and it generally is placed, in that program.
Right.
So everyone will always have to comply with what these rules say, but a program might have more stringent requirements or different requirements.
Okay. Tim, do we issue a determination letter saying this project is prevailing wage? I think that would be helpful to any applicant.
Yes.
So they do receive...
So, in general, if there is the EDA financing and involves construction, there's a pre-construction meeting that the labor compliance team does, and when that happens, there's a letter issued that says this project is subject to prevailing wage, and you must comply with all these things.
So that pre-construction, is that pre-bid also? Because if it's not, then...
When you say pre-bid, what do you mean?
So applicant comes to us for a project. Do we issue the determination letter at that time or after they're awarded the grant?
So generally what happens is with EDA financing, the applicant comes in and they want the financing for a particular project. Once they're approved, before they can start any work, they must do a pre-construction meeting, and that determines the EDA and labor regs and statutes that are applicable in that situation.
What we want to try to avoid is the project's bid out, and then the applicant says, at the time I bid the project out, I did not realize if prevailing wage applied to this project.
So that's a double-edged sword, because there are situations where an applicant bids something out and comes to EDA after they bid it out for financing. So we wouldn't know that how they bid it out, when they bid it out. But if they are waiting to get the EDA financing before they bid out, then certainly they would know the applicable prevailing wage rules and statutes.
So, but generally speaking, I mean, whenever we're doing, we give ourselves pretty good grades, not perfect. Applicants are generally aware that when this comes.
In the application, it's generally, they are notified of prevailing wage during the application project. But certainly we'll look at what you're requesting us to see if there's a place prior to approval that we can add more prevailing wage information.
Because we want to avoid the situation where an applicant bids out a project, comes to the EDA for award, is granted that award, and says at the time of the bid, I did not ask for prevailing wage pricing.
Generally speaking, we ask that question. Let's on Maurice's team more so looking at where's George and the Aspire team, for example. That's a conversation we have with every aspiring merge applicant of like, you're showing us these numbers, these are prevailing wage compliance numbers, right? And if they're not, we often send them back. But that's usually before they've formally submitted their applications.
Thank you.
Certainly before next year. I don't think I screwed up for you, George.
George, you've been asked to come up here.
Yeah. Any further comments or questions in the room or on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the amendments as suggested?
Robert Kimko.
Thank you. Second?
Fred Dumas, second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the item is approved. Next, under authority matters, Lori on a memorandum of understanding with the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority.
Good morning. The request before you today is for the approval to execute a new and updated memorandum of understanding between the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority. The MOU details roles, responsibilities, and financial obligations between the two organizations. This MOU amends and restates an MOU which was originally executed in October of 2010. That MOU was drafted and executed prior to base closure and contemplated roles and responsibilities largely focused on planning activity for the Fort redevelopment. Since that time, FEMIRA has evolved significantly, and this MOU aims to accomplish two primary things. First is to more accurately reflect the current roles and responsibilities of the two organizations, and second is to formalize timing and repayment of FEMIRA's financial obligation to EDA for salary and fringe costs of the dedicated FEMIRA staff. In terms of roles and responsibilities, FEMIRA has dedicated staff that performs the day-to-day activities necessary to carry out its mission to redevelop the fort, while EDA provides support services to supplement FEMIRA staff capacity. Over the years since the original MOU was executed, FEMIRA has built significant capacity and is able to perform the functions necessary to meet the majority of their needs, and reliance on EDA staff support has greatly decreased. Under the original MOU, FEMIRA has an obligation to pay for the cost of salary and fringe related to the direct staff of FEMIRA. FEMIRA has consistently made these payments, but the payments have lagged up to a year during that time due to timing of sales and availability of cash. In order to provide FEMIRA with sufficient liquidity to support their operations and enable them to focus on advancing the activities critical to the redevelopment of the fort, this MOU would defer the payment of the costs associated with salary and fringe benefits related to FEMIRA dedicated staff until December 31st, 2027. For monitoring and reporting purposes, for both EDA and FEMIRA, EDA will generate an annual invoice in January for the prior calendar year total of salary and fringe costs. In closing, I want to note that this MOU also requires approval from the FEMIRA board. FEMIRA will be presenting it to their board at the upcoming meeting on October 16th. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Any questions on the phone? Okay,
no,
hearing none. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the memorandum is approved.
Thanks, Lori, for that. And shout out to Kara and the team at the fort who do an extraordinary job. I think they have more board members than they do staff. yeah, I believe that's true. Thank you. They have 7 or 8 staff members. And so from a, you know, we're essentially floating them some money, but they run that thing on a shoestring. And it's been extraordinarily successful, as we've all seen in various forms of fashion. So shout out to Kara.
Great. Under authority matters, again, John on delegations of authority, legal reviews, and pilot grant programs.
John and Monica doing it.
John and
a duet.
Yes. I'm going to start off. Good morning. By way of background, the authority procured the services of a board governance consultant to make recommendations to improve board practices, efficiency, and functionality. In 2020, they suggested the authority review the current thresholds for approval by the board to determine whether more authority could be delegated to staff. Over the past several years, staff has recommended and the board has approved various delegations of authority, and today we are requesting two further delegations of authority surrounding legal reviews and pilot grant program agreements. I'm going to present on the legal reviews delegation, and then John will jump in on the second request. As you're aware, applicants applying to the EDA's programs are subject to the authority's disqualification and debarment rules. EDA staff verifies the applicant's disclosures, performs due diligence, to confirm same. If we encounter potential grounds for disqualification or suspension, then board action may be required to disqualify or suspend the applicant or to determine that disqualification or suspension are not appropriate. The board has delegated authority to staff to clear applicants under a variety of circumstances, and we're now asking the board to delegate authority to staff again to determine not to debar or disqualify an applicant or vendor if they are subject to civil judgment or finding of violations by a New Jersey state agency department or judgment or finding of violations arising out of an action filed by a New Jersey state agency or department where the state agency or relevant department has confirmed that, one, the applicant or vendor is in substantial good standing as determined by the agency, two, the entity has entered into an agreement with the respective state agency that addresses the action to the satisfaction of the agency or department, or three, that despite any such judgment or finding, the state agency or relevant department does not object to the authority proceeding with the application or contract. This request for delegate authority arises out of our experience in handling legal reviews, particularly in authority programs that are handled in coordination with another state agency. For instance, we currently have the HDSRF program jointly administered with EDA and DEP, and we have an applicant where DEP brought an action against then in the courts to enforce an administrative consent order, which required the removal of an underground storage tank. The court issued a penalty in order of compliance, which included the site remediation, and the application for the HDSRF is for site remediation of the property at issue and was filed before the action was filed before the court. DEP has expressed support and approval of the application to get the site remediated despite the enforcement action. But because of the court order against them, we don't have the delegated authority to clear. By confirming confirmation of approval with the state agency or department who brought the action or found the violations, staff will ensure that legal matters are considered for relevance and concern prior to legal review for any such matters in the future.
Members were also asked to approve delegation authority to the CEO to approve extensions of time, not to exceed 12 months, to pilot grant programs that are open to municipal, county, and state entities. This delegation is for extensions of time only. No changes to the grant amounts or obligations would have applied to this delegation. And when considering the extension, the CEO would take into account, of course, the program's requirements and also the recipient's diligent efforts to pursue the program's requirements. This delegation came about in response to the previously discussed City of Salem request for additional time under the Food Insecurity Planning grant. So in the future, similar such requests would not need to be brought before the board, and it's a fairly small universe of pilot grant programs that we're talking about here. This delegation would allow the CEO to extend program reporting and implementation deadlines in a timely and efficient manner. Happy to take questions for either delegation.
On the first one, I agree with what's going on here. So we have the same situation with you all the time. People are in compliance. I have an agreement with them. But what if somebody, like the agency, for example, someone had owed back wage, you came up with a settlement agreement, they're going to pay over time, so you don't debar them. But then they stop making payments, and they're on a project already. Can you then debar them?
I mean, if we had that situation, we would go and check in, and we do situation checks more than once. So if necessary, we could then take action. Or if there comes a situation where you're, where DOL is aware that you're no longer in compliance, let us know. Absolutely.
Okay. Are we taking one vote on both? Any further comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve both recommendations?
Motion to approve, Angela.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Dragon.
Okay, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the modifications are approved. Thank you. Emma, on the contract extension for BCG and McKinsey.
All right. That's for last.
One more.
Okay. The members of the board are asked to approve the extension of the business and information technology consulting and advisory services contract currently awarded to McKinsey & Company and the Boston Consulting Group for a total of $3,958,820 for support across four work streams: human resources, accounting and financial reporting, strategic planning, and information technology. Split across two vendors, McKinsey will support three work streams for a total of $2,408,820 across 6 months, and BCG will support one work stream for a total of $1,550,000 across 4 months. Specifically, McKinsey will continue providing consulting services for the authority's HR and accounting financial reporting departments, and BCG will continue providing consulting services to the authority's IT department. This past March, the board approved $2.857 million for McKinsey to support the following three work streams: human resources, accounting and financial reporting, and also CEO for strategic planning. And the following month, the board approved an award of $900,000 for BCG for information technology implementation work. To date, both vendors have accomplished the following milestones on each contract. For McKinsey, for strategic planning, McKinsey created full drafts of Part 1 and Part 2 of the EDA strategic plan, with Part 1 focusing on a review of EDA's programs and activities, and Part 2 focusing on operational priorities and strategy for 2024 to 2027. In total, the strategic plan consists of 12 chapters. In accounting and financial reporting, McKinsey supported the creation of a draft five-year financial plan, including modeling, and helped implement process improvements across disbursements, month-end close, and the future state of accounting and financial reporting. Serving as one of the largest components of McKinsey's focus under this contract, their work supporting our human resources department consists of the following: the creation of a new recruitment partnership model between HR and business units, revamped job descriptions and grading processes, including the creation of a purpose-built JD template and career progression matrix for managers. They developed a future organizational design and revamped internal operations to meet current structure for workforce demands. They created workforce planning and analytics tools, including headcount and budgeting, and the design of a new compensation policy and a redesign of EDA's current promotion process. For Boston Consulting Group, supporting EDA's IT workstream over the last 4 months, BCG has accomplished the following: enhanced transparency across EDA IT service offerings through the creation of a digital IT service brochure that provided user-friendly and accessible information on services. They helped streamline service requests, develop standardization procedures and opportunities for automatic workflows. They created feedback loops for EDA staff to provide comment on service utilization and set metrics for user satisfaction and resolution time, conducted Gen AI trainings for executive leadership and staff, and developed an implementation roadmap for IT strategic priorities. Of the two contracts, BCG's concluded in late August, and McKinsey's expired on September 25th. So with that in mind, staff is asking the board to approve an extension under the current business and IT consulting contract for the following. For McKinsey, that will be a six-month extension of the current HR workstream with a significant focus on implementation, specifically touching on facilitating the finalization and implementation of revamped compensation and promotion policies, including the support for the pilot of a new promotion cadence starting this fall, streamlining recruitment efficiency, supporting the pilot and launch of an updated orientation and onboarding process, designing a future state operating model, including succession planning for HR leadership, and building out strategic workforce capabilities, specifically through increased reporting and more robust data analytics, as well as a headcount budgeting process. Phase two, so it'll be HR and then two other things, so it'll be phase two of strategic planning support, which is bringing just book ones and two to close, then it'll go to staff for implementation, and then an additional 3 months of support for working sessions with accounting and financial reporting staff to continue streamlining the month-out close process. For BCG, the contract extension will include implementation support for IT, specifically around designing a future organizational state, including updating job descriptions for open and recommended roles, the creation of a revised hiring approach to attract IT talent, and increasing innovation in IT delivery and servicing offerings, including standardizing reporting and CRM, and a further and finalized establishment of IT service catalog, the creation of a post-launch application process, and the establishment of a product lifecycle working group, and establishment of new IT meeting cadences like IT office hours to better support and integrate IT within the business unit. After several back-and-forth communications for the vendor's best and final offers, the total price from BCG for the IT workstream was $1,550,000,
and McKinsey's for Human Resources, Accounting and Financial Reporting, and Strategic Planning was $2,408,820. Staff concluded that the pricing was reasonable given the work to be performed and the proposed deliverables and recommends the proposed extension for BCG and McKinsey as most advantageous to the EDA, the price and other factors considered. With that, any questions?
Would you expect these to be the last extensions? Any comments,
expect,
questions?
Expect, but not promise, but expect.
There's a lot of fun hours.
Anyone on the phone, questions or comments?
Yeah, this is Aisha. I think this extension makes sense given their current scope and obviously their expertise. I just want to make sure to encourage us as staff and board to explore how we continue to invest in additional firms as well. You know, kind of a double-edged sword of continuing to work with those with the capacity and expertise, but also wanting to invest in, you know, smaller firms, more diverse firms, and so on. So I think this extension makes sense, and we should move forward and simultaneously be thinking about how we can ensure that we're working with additional firms.
Great point. Thank you, Aisha. Well, I fully agree with. Thank you.
Terry, I wasn't sure. What was the answer to the question if you thought this might be the last extension? I couldn't understand the answer.
My answer was I expect it will be, but I did not promise that it would be, but I expect it will be.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
Any further questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimkin.
Second.
Aisha Glover.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Go hearing none, the extensions are approved. Thank you.
Yes.
Finally, Jackie on Citigroup Global Markets et al.
Good morning. Citigroup Global Markets, Inc., Citigroup Technology, Inc., Citicorp North America, Inc., and Citibank, N.A. applied to the authority's Business Employment Incentive Program and was approved for award in 2004. A modification application was submitted in March 2022 following corporate changes. In addition to the grantees, Citigroup Financial Products, Inc., Citicorp, LLC, and Citicorp Banking Corp. were subject to review as well, as they are affiliates based on ownership structure. In accordance with our legal review process, Legal Affairs reviewed Citi's disclosures and conducted due diligence to determine whether there were any grounds for possible disqualification. Relevant litigation and regulatory matters relating to Citi are in the board memo. The grantees disclosed pending civil litigation involving antitrust, securities, racketeering, and wage and hour claims. Similar cases were also found during the course of the legal review. These matters have been settled with no admission of liability, have been dismissed, or are pending. These civil cases are not disqualifying under our regulations as they have either not concluded or they do not involve any admission or finding of liability or wrongdoing. There were 11 civil regulatory matters that resulted in penalties identified within our relevant five-year period. We note that civil regulatory matters are common for large multinational financial institutions. Consent orders or other similar agreements were reached between the parties, resolving the matters, and no convictions resulted from same. As such, these regulatory matters can be cleared through the delegated authority provided by the board in June 2022. In its legal questionnaire, grantees disclosed a guilty plea between Citicorp, LLC, and the United States Department of Justice. On May 20, 2015, Citicorp, along with several other large banks, agreed to plead guilty to one count of violating Section 1 of the Sherman Antitrust Act in order to resolve the DOJ's investigation. The DOJ charged Citicorp and its co-conspirators with entering into and engaging in a conspiracy to fix the Euro-U.S. dollar currency pair exchanged in the foreign currency exchange spot market by agreeing to eliminate competition in the purchase and sale of the Euro-USD currency pair in the United States and elsewhere. This conspiracy occurred at least as early as December 2007 and continued until at least January 2013 per the complaint. In addition to the guilty plea, Citicorp agreed to pay a criminal fine of $925 million and serve a 3-year probation term beginning on January 5, 2017. This conviction is grounds for potential disqualification under the authority's disqualification and debarment rules. The rules specifically identify a violation of federal antitrust statutes as a cause for potential disqualification. There are also two catch-all provisions which permit disqualification for violation of any law which may bear upon a lack of responsibility or moral integrity and any other cause of such serious and compelling nature as may be determined by the authority to warrant disqualification for assistance. In deciding whether disqualification is warranted, the authority must consider all mitigating factors in determining the seriousness of the offense or inadequacy of performance. Upon written request for mitigating factors, the applicant's counsel provided a statement addressing same, which is included in the board memo. Despite the seriousness of the matter, Citi cooperated with agency and authority investigations, accepted responsibility, and paid its agreed-upon penalties and settlements. The guilty plea was entered 9 years ago and involved conduct that concluded over 11 years ago. The misconduct involved one Citi employee based in London that was not involved in senior management and was terminated. Senior management was not involved in or aware of the misconduct, and Citi has implemented a compliance program to prevent and detect this conduct from occurring. The examination period ended on January 5th, 2020. We note that J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. was brought to the board on July 9, 2015 for its role in this conspiracy and its guilty plea, and the board voted to not disqualify J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. at that time. Following review of the relevant matters and mitigating factors, we are recommending the board not disqualify Citi and its affiliates from receiving financial assistance from the authority. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Decision of the substance of the matter. A reminder of the long-term nature of these relationships. Again, George W. Bush was in his first term as president when this was approved. And so here we are grappling with some things.
I assume this would not have been altered pursuant to our earlier discussions about granting authority to you, to the CEO.
This one still needs to come. Yeah.
And then I guess another interesting question is, I assume the state does business with the city court.
Assume that, but don't know that to be certain.
I do not know. It may.
They manage cash. Madam Treasurer may know off the top of her head.
She just dropped, unfortunately.
You can't answer the question. It's very convenient.
It would seem likely, but
it
I don't
seem think. Likely, yes, I would agree. Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? And we would note, I guess, as the memo does, that we did do this similar thing earlier with respect to J.P. Morgan Chase. Okay, hearing no further comments or questions, could I hear a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont will make the motion.
Second.
Second, Ryan.
Thank you, Phil. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to abstain. I just don't understand enough or know enough to be voting on this.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. The motion is approved. Thank you. Tim, over to you for board memoranda.
Yeah, not much to report this month. There's only one board memo, delegated authority memo on credit approvals, two approvals for loans that happened in between meetings. Maybe six or seven delegated approval memos last time, so ebbs and flows as those go. But nothing material to report there.
Okay. Anyone else? Any business or items? Daniel, anything we forgot to do? Thank you very much to the board members for our 100% attendance. That's great. I think can say that we have our next board meeting coming up in Atlantic City, which is very exciting. We look forward to seeing everyone there, having attendance on the phone if you can't be there. So could I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion, Cruz.
Thank you. Second. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, operator.
You're welcome. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation.